Blog Talk Radio.
Victoria, are you on mute? Am I? Victoria, I can't hear you. Okay, well, I'm not sure if Victoria's talking or not. Can anybody hear her? Okay. Well, while Victoria, I guess, hangs up and calls back or whatever she feels she needs to do to get herself heard, I will go ahead and say welcome to Strange Magic with your hostess, Victoria Frost. Here you can dig deep and unafraid and find inspiration in unexpected places. Now, I'm sure Victoria will be back any moment to tell you about the prompt, but I'll go ahead and get a head start. The prompt for the night is a quote from the Dalai Lama, which is, "In the learning of tolerance, your enemy, in the practice of tolerance, one's enemy is the best teacher." It was a write that she put up, or a contest that she put up yesterday, allowing for pre-write, and I happened to glance through it, got a huge amount of entries, but quality. And as I believe someone said earlier today, it's all about quality, not quantity. Welcome back, Victoria.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Oh my God, thank God.
Don't you just love it when a show starts in complete awkward silence?
I know, I'm sitting here just like doing my... I'm just doing my own thing over here, and all of a sudden it's, are you on mute? And I'm like, definitely not on mute. Like, I checked three times. I put myself on mute, I don't know. Technology hates me today. In fact, even at work, we did an update, and it completely shut down our ability to print to our printers. Like, I lost access to QuickBooks, which, as an accountant, that's a bad thing to do. I have this huge, it's a financial review. And so it's literally like a budget of 26 hours. Couldn't even get into the QuickBooks today. I've got to get it done by the end of the week. It was a very long day, and apparently
just
it continues.
One of those days.
Yes, but thank you for starting the show for me, for letting me know that my phone was rebelling yet again. You know, it has to do that. And for letting everyone know about our contest, kind of like you said, we didn't have a ton of rights. We only had about 10 entries, which thankfully everybody gave us permission to read. So I'm super excited to get into that. But we really have some awesome entries that people provided. So, you know, sometimes it's not about the quantity of rights. Sometimes it's about that quality that you really get to bear down into and dig deep. So I'm super, super excited about this. So thankful to have you here with me.
Absolutely.
Gone last week, and at least I get to spend some time with Pam and the wonderful Pam and my friends, and so I'm looking forward to this.
Absolutely, me too. I enjoy hanging out with you and reading and commenting on poetry.
Absolutely. Well, we don't have anybody else calling in just yet. I do see Frank and Casey on the board. So, hey, guys, if you want to call in and hang out, we're not going to say no, but I know. Pam is like the Kevin of late night poets. She's everywhere and can sometimes be intimidating, but I promise she's amazing.
I'm like a ninja.
You are.
Buddy.
Well, you have like these mad skills of being able to find like people's like contests for people that nobody else ever finds. And you're just a rock star, and I'm thankful for you. So, of course. To get us started off on the night, I think I'm going to have us start, if I can figure out where I'm at, I think we're going to have us start with Poetic Picasso. Frank always does this amazing job of giving us SoundClouds when he's not able to call in. So you have a few options in interacting with the show. You can always call into the show to comment and read. You can write for the show, which we always love, or just submit poems if you're in the group. And then, of course, people can do SoundCloud, which is great because for those that are shy or can't call in for whatever reason, this is a great way for us to hear your work in your voice. And it really allows us to hear it as the artist intended because I have different inflections than other people might. So we're going to start the show off with one of these SoundClouds by Frank. Because he always does such a marvelous job, and it's just a great example of ways you can interact with us, even if you can't call in. So this is going to be The Understanding of Each Other by Poetic Picasso.
If I was only the supreme ruler of my mind, I would be the creator of my every thought, the conductor of the play of my entire life, of it was so connoisseur of thespian talent. But to know of my flaws, I must first know the imperfect state of my human nature. Oh, to understand the toils of my drudgeries, I must travail into the deep realm of suffering. To bethink myself a man who can be trusted, I must learn to trust those for whom I confide in. There is a philosophy of which man should aspire, to be all he can be to himself, and unto others also. If I apply the fundamentals of that didactic teaching, then I would know indeed who is friend from foe. We are not born to hate with such a blind passion. Our differences are not greater than our similarities. If we only made the effort to love our neighbor, then we would be staring into a looking glass. Everything that irritates us about others can lead us, oh, to the understanding of ourselves in character. In the poem.
A fantastic read and write by Poetic Picasso, a.k.a. Frank. And it, again, it's just one of those really awesome ways to hear it in their voice. And Frank always does this amazing job of having the most perfect background music for his pieces. So with that being said, Pam, would you mind starting us off with some thoughts?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. And yes, I have to agree. Frank does a wonderful job with his recordings, the balancing of the reading voice and the choice of music. And I think these are just beautifully written couplets. Oftentimes I see rhyming couplets and there is some subtle rhyme in here. For the most part, the flow of it seems to depend largely on almost a sense of inner rhythm and meter that he seems to have within his poetry. And I like how this is very observant of oneself, of the way someone thinks. And if I was only the supreme ruler of my mind, I would be the creator of my every thought. And I like that because it opens us up to the idea that we're not in control of everything we think. And he touches upon the later, the whole idea of coming to knowledge of one's humanity and the idea that even the best of us have thoughts that we don't know where they came from, that make us feel maybe we struggle with anger, we struggle with, I want to say addictions or, you know, things that we are drawn to. And we are not born to hate with such a blind passion. Our differences are not greater than our similarities. I like that he put that in there. If we only made the effort to love our neighbor, we would be staring into a looking glass. Now, that is beautifully profound, the idea of your neighbor, now obviously as you know in the Bible, it touches upon the idea that your neighbor is everyone and anyone. It's not just the people you look like. It's not just the people you get along with. But then it takes, that line takes in consideration that your neighbor is also yourself, that you should love yourself as much as you love other people. And when it kind of has that duality meaning of when you can, in earnest, love anyone, including people that have hurt you, have wronged you, then you can look at yourself in the mirror, and even like a metaphorical mirror, and realize that you are growing as a human. Sorry, bleh, that you are growing as a thinker, and that you've come to that realization of what it means to be a true and honest person. So excellent write and very well done.
That was such a fantastic comment, Pam. And I love your comments, because you really do delve not only into the piece, but also into how it applies as a human outside and, you know, actual application, you know? And so especially when you mentioned how a lot of times we aren't in control of our thoughts, I think that's jarring for a lot of people to think about, but it's a truth, because if we admit that we don't control our thoughts, then we start to understand like how truly out of control we are. I mean, the only organ in our body that we truly control is our breath. You know, it's the only process of our body that we can forcefully stop. Everything else is going to continue, and even our own thoughts. And that particularly resounds with me because after I became a parent, I actually developed a general anxiety disorder because I started having what's called calls from the void. And people have them. I have clinical depression, but I've never been suicidal because of my past. But people will sometimes be like, you know, oh, what if I just like, you know, jump off that cliff, you know, the urge of standing on an edge and jumping off. So it's kind of that calls from the void. I'd never had that until I had kids. And that's when I started having those intrusive thoughts of like looking at a house to buy and seeing a horseshoe thing and having very graphic, intrusive thoughts of, you know, one of my children impaling themselves upon it and that playing out very graphically. And when you start to understand that your thoughts cannot even be controlled, that there are thoughts and feelings that you are going to have that you don't have control over, you can react to them, but you don't have control over them. That's really is that jarring moment of understanding that, you know, we don't have as much control as we think, even over ourselves, the thing that we should have absolute control over. We don't. And I appreciate, too, what you said in respect to how if we understand these things and we seek to have connection with fellow humans, if we seek to find the things that we are similar with rather than dissimilar, that often we will grow further together, or closer together, wrong word, but same meaning. You get my drift. And especially in what we're seeing with the world, at least in the United States, and I'm sure other countries are seeing this as well in their own ways, there's such a huge level of division caused by social media. There's these huge rifts that are being grown between friends and families and these connections and relationships that were always seen as stable. And it's over things that we never thought would divide us. And yet it's because people are choosing to focus on those differences and saying, this is the hill that I die on. And it does beg the question of how can we ever create change and grow together if everything is a hill to die on? So I think that was just a really, really fantastic comment upon this piece by Frank. So thank you for that. I think what I really appreciate about this piece, and I'm not sure that I can even add to Pam's, but that was such a stellar comment, is again, just that idea that, you know, if we seek to make community and we stop having expectations for how people should be, I believe that's truly when community is able to be found. I think that true love happens when you accept someone exactly as they are, not who they could be, not who they were, not what you think they should be, but exactly as they are, and appreciate them for that, because they come with unique and beautiful perspectives that can let us see the world in a different light. And so I do really appreciate this piece in that sense, because in a very subtle way, Frank reminds us that tolerance does not necessarily come in the form of putting up with people. It comes in the form of true acceptance. You may not like everything about a person. I mean, I know that I can be sometimes long-winded and enthusiastic. And, you know, even for my age, I sometimes come off as childish because I just get so excited about the things and I'm truly passionate. It just kind of bubbles out of me. And some people say, you know, for a woman my age, I should not do those things. But to truly appreciate and be close to people, that's the things that we have to be okay with. We have to learn to say those are small little things and they're not really what determines a person's character and goodness and worth. But there are other innate values in them that do. And so I appreciated that to understand that we are all flawed, because I know that I myself, and Frank says this, to understand, to know my flaws, I first must know the imperfect state of my human nature. I love that too, because I know for a very long time I struggled with this idea, this concept that those around me were perfectly fine and happy in friendships with me or relationships with me, and I was the one who was struggling because I was the perfect spouse, and I know I'm not. But there was that idea, and I'd like to think I'm not the only one. And so I feel like Frank really speaks a lot of truth in this, that idea of community through acceptance, understanding that we are all flawed, even if we don't see it, and truthfully that we are the conductors play of our life. Again, that idea that we may not be able to control everything, but we have the ability to choose how we react. Anger is going to happen. Happiness is going to happen. Sadness is going to happen. We are going to have jealousy. We are going to have rage. We are going to have joy. We are going to have envy. And none of those are negative emotions. But we as the conductor get to choose how we use those and how we react and how we use them to interact with other people. And so I just adore this piece because I feel like it truly touches upon those characteristics of life and the idea of finding a way to be with people, to be together, to be united, even against the things that might otherwise divide us. Because truthfully, if everybody was the same, life would be pretty boring. So stunning, stunning piece by Frank, and a fantastic write and read, and all of it is stunning. So yeah, great way to start the show, right, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. I always enjoy Frank's Oscar Wilde pieces. And so definitely a good choice of a kickoff poem. And I really like that you touched in your comment upon the flawed humanity part and how it's, you know, that we all have to learn to accept, you know, differences and the fact that we are all flawed. So I thought that was very well said.
Oh, thank you. It's definitely something I still struggle with because I like to think I'm perfect sometimes. But, you know, it's all part of growth, understanding our shortcomings, right? Perfectly
absolutely
imperfect. All right. Well, we've got Casey Day on the board as well. So I'm going to put Casey's poem up and I'll give this one a read. This is called A Warrior. Oh, wait, no, I guess you're reading yours, Pam. I like Casey.
Okay.
You're going to have to wait. It's up. Now Pam has to read. Sorry, Casey. We'll get yours next.
All right. And this is something I threw together pretty quick. So this is A Warrior Travels Realms Unknown. And it goes like this. A warrior travels realms unknown, studying depths of self and weaknesses revealed to gain strength, looking forward beyond the stab of yesterday's knifed words, clarity gained as tolerance becomes a union of fibers weaving a nation together. Opportunity to learn arises in the magma of the enemy's actions. A warrior chooses forgiveness, allowing for bitter indulgences of self-pity to be washed up against salvaged shorelines of unmasked vulnerability. Self-movement as eyes and mind observe, and a deep gulp of wisdom, the soul is renewed, and the blood speaks in prayers of healing. End poem.
So I love this piece because it truly shows how many things in life are those two sides of a coin. When we think of a warrior, we don't think of someone who searches their souls and their depths. We think of someone who goes out and gets things done, who goes to battle, who puts their life on the line, someone who is brave and who is strong. And for whatever reason, society has taught us that brawn does not often come with brains. But this shows that there is, because if you think of a warrior and you think of what they go through, I mean, think of our soldiers who come back with PTSD, because the military does often teach soldiers that they should not show pain, they should not worry about emotion. Like, you know, sure, like have your battle buddies, have your jokes, but when shit hits the fan, you've got to be ready. And so we look at them and we start to understand sometimes the military and PTSD comes from a place that does not have an understanding of emotional expression. And I don't often share stuff about my personal life, but my husband is 100% disabled veteran, and part of his profile is PTSD. And that comes because one of the events, he was 25 Sierra, satellite communications, so he really was a communications guy. They didn't really want him interacting with the enemy, but every once in a while he went out on these runs. And on one of these runs, there was a boy who was standing in the road, a child, like not even 10 years old, child. And because of the environment that they are in, they had to run the child over. They killed the child because in that area, they will use children as bonds because most people will stop for a child. We appreciate them and we want them to live, and we see them as innocent, and yet they are weaponized. And so that is one of the many traumas that haunt him and haunt his friends, because it is something that he had to live through, and he does not have the emotional bandwidth to handle it and to cope with what he has seen and what had to be done. And so it's just this thing that haunts him. You know, all the friends that have committed suicide, that have attempted suicide, there's the survivor's guilt. And so I appreciate this piece, because a true warrior, someone who is constantly in this place, has to learn how to deal with something like that. They have to search their soul. They have to go and find their weaknesses to have strength in it, because if day after day you are subjected to that, the idea that you become numb to it really isn't a thing. Because it does haunt you. And so when you start to understand it, when it no longer is that ghost waiting to come out in the late hours. And so to me, I really appreciate this. You speak of a warrior, but you speak of someone who is a true warrior, someone who goes out and attempts to weave a nation together, but also understands that when they are not on the battlefield, that not everything and everyone is their enemy, that forgiveness can still be found against people that are seen as evil or wrong, or again, that enemy, but truly they are innocents that are just caught in the war play of leaders who are relatively untouched. The idea, too, that you said, allowing a bitter indulgence of self-pity to be washed against salted shorelines of unmasked vulnerability. I think that's a really poignant verse. Because when you think of a salted shore, when you think of salted earth, it is earth that does not grow. It is earth that is barren. And so here we are allowing a warrior to sit there and say, I hate this. I hate what I do. I hate life. I wish that this is not it. And that sounds like a pity party, but truly it is a vulnerability to understand that you are doing something that you do not want to do. You are doing something that you hate. You are doing something that harms you. And so allowing them to have that bitter indulgence of this vulnerability, it allows them to renew their soul, because they do not always have to be strong. They do not always have to be prepared to defend themselves. And in that, in the idea of taking blood, it also offers the idea of eventually prayers and healing brought together, all because it brought a deeper search of oneself. I think it's just a stunning piece, because you've used something that often is seen as a weapon and hard, and you've made it so much more. So thank you for sharing that, Pam.
My pleasure, and thank you for the inspiration, for the wonderful comment. And You know, I really like when you people comment and they share a part of their personal life, you and everybody else who does that, because to me, you know, there's the comments that are the most insightful for both listener and reader are the ones where, you know, we get to unveil a little bit about ourselves and learn about each other and, you know, just and learn how our poetry impacts people.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't take all the comments. So this week was crazy. And so I go to Pam, just so all the listeners get to have this fun story. I go to Pam, this wonderful Pam who was with me here. And I was like, Pam, I need a contest idea. And she provides me. She's like, here's like 15 quotes. And I was like, oh, my God. So Pam says I inspired her, but really she's the one that gave me the prompt. And it was a fantastic quote that I got to pick from. And so thank you for helping and putting this show together, because it does show how not just we as poets can influence each other, but truthfully too, how LNP kind of comes together to support people. You know, it's easy to say that giving nice comments to people are easy, but the truth of it is that, you know, LNP truly strives to be this community, to take care of each other and uplift each other. And sometimes us just saying that someone who's beginning, we can still see value in your work because there is value there. So I appreciate you, Pam. I truly do, for all the things you do for the show, all the things you do just to make this wonderful community everything it is. I mean, you and Phil and everyone who does this stuff. We've created this space because of hard work and dedication from, you know, great people who've been around for a while like you. So, and are you telling me that Felon is on the line? Hold on. Area code 470. Is that my hot little chili pepper?
That is me.
Yes. Oh, this makes my night. How are you, my dear?
I'm asleep, but I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm half asleep.
Well,
but I'm here.
Mean, I'll. No. Half asleep is so great. I'll take you however you are for as long as you'll have me. So, did you get a chance to hear Pam's poem?
I'm sorry I didn't, but Pam, I will give it. I will look over right quick. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally good. You're totally good. With that in mind, we're going to actually move on to Casey Days, because I'm a terrible human being, and oh my goodness, I'm like all over the place. No, don't. Okay, I'm so struggling, guys. I went to go click her link, and I hit like a steel bone corset website because I'm obsessed with them and I'm crazy. So this is Casey Day Quality. I'm going to get that posted and I'll take this read. I became a first responder to save lives. I did not become a first responder to play God, but quality of life is a factor that somehow finds its way into the mix. All I can say is that I've worked with all kinds of people, and some of these people have cerebral palsy, which, if you don't know, means they're quadriplegic. Most cannot walk, must be fed through tubes. They need constant help doing everything in life, though their bodies have failed them. Their brains work absolutely wonderfully. Beep. 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 Hand me the gauze. Get a non-breather on him. They cannot express themselves. They do not have the ability to talk to anyone just willy-nilly. But if you get to know them, you'll have the best conversations and the biggest emotional connection. One person in particular that comes to mind has symptoms that arose later in life. This person at one time could walk, now bound by a wheelchair and unable to eat, speak, dress, etc. They had days where they would cry, frustrated by the inability to connect, but beep, beep. Beep, 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 beep. His O2 status dropping. We got headstones. They had days they laughed, days they twirled in their wheelchair, days they told me stories non-verbally, days they took selfies, saw museums, went on road trips. They had what I believe to be quality. So when I hear, but what about the quality of life? I wonder, what is your quality of life? He's not breathing. Start CPR. because you can't decide for this person as long as they have a heartbeat. Beep, beep, beep. We got him back. End poem. Wow. That was, I'm sitting here with goosebumps. I got to read that. I'm really excited. I got to read that. I'm sitting here with goosebumps. Fantastic, right, Casey? Thank you so much for that. And Fallon, having joined this show, would you mind starting us off with some thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Being a medic myself, I can relate to what she was saying. I'm trying to read her A&M. She says, not a breather. Oh, okay, she's just giving pointers about the, what a, you know, the tombstone is an a segment, which is called, we call it STEMI. It's someone who's having an anterior infarction. But basically, I really do like, I like the fact that the last stanza here is because you cannot decide for a person as long as they have a heartbeat. You know, you're trying to breathe for them. You're trying to breathe life into them. Who's to say that they don't have a life? Who's to say what their quality of life is because it doesn't meet the standards that you set before them? So this is a very thought-provoking, right? Excellent job there.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Victoria, or is she on mute? Let's find
no,
out.
I'm on mute. The mute monster got me. That's it.
Thank goodness, because me being on mute is a lot easier to fix.
Oh, today. I was going to say, that was a really great comment, Ellen. I'll try not to repeat over everything that I said, of course, to my mute monster. But kind of what Pam was saying, how sometimes we get to bring our own experiences into our comments. I appreciate you bringing yours in there because we often don't think of the situations that paramedics, ER doctors, emergency responders find themselves in. And so I appreciate you sharing that because we think the glorified Hollywood version, and it's not always that. And sometimes there is that heartbreak from patients that you treat long-term or often troubled patients, that sort of thing, that we think that the interaction is so short that you don't always get to have that connection. And so I appreciate you sharing your experience and helping us see that life a little differently than what theater would have us believe. So that was a beautiful comment. Thank you, my dear. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is just beautifully written. I like how she puts the beep, beep, beeps in there, and you read that so well, creating that kind of pause and that tension. And I like how this touches on the moral dilemmas of working in personal struggles of mind and heart, of working as a first responder when you're faced with, you know, what is our idea of quality of life. And, she really captures the intensity. And I really liked what Fallon had to say about this poem. These lines are beautiful. They had days they laughed, days they twirled in their wheelchair, days they told me stories non-verbally, days they took selfies. I used to work at a nursing home, and I was one who was not around a lot of elderly people, and so I would get, when I first started working there, I was really nervous, and especially with trying to communicate with people who couldn't speak or whose minds weren't fully there. And I had this moment where I had gone to a room to clean a lady's room, and she was paralyzed from the neck down. She couldn't move. She couldn't speak. And I was looking around, I was cleaning, and there was a picture of a young girl. And I knew it wasn't her because it was a newer picture. And it had the same curly hair as her, though. And I said, is this your granddaughter? She has your beautiful curly hair. And she smiled. And it was, and sorry, I'm going into a slightly personal story, but we don't have a lot of nights. But anyways, for me, that was really just a learning experience and of you know, that moment where you realize that someone can communicate with simply a smile, and that even and appreciates that any effort on other people's parts to communicate with them. So anyways, I think this is, like I said, it's raw, it's honest, it's beautiful. I appreciate Casey and Felon and any other first responders, and all the work that they do is just absolutely deserves all our love and respect. So,
well, thank you, Pam. You're a hero in my heart. You're a hero because all that you do at home yourself, so don't tread lightly on that, because you're one to be admired.
Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
Oh, absolutely. Both seconding what both Pam and Felon said. You know, I'm just the seconding of it, but absolutely, you know, understanding the trials and the tribulations that some people go through, Pam with what she does at home, Felon what she does on her job, even Casey what she does on her job, understanding the toll it can take. It's not an easy thing. And so recognizing that, I think, is such a perfect thing. And Pam, I appreciate you sharing that story because you're right. So often we look at people who don't communicate, or, you know, I think of people with dementia, for example, or Alzheimer's. We kind of view them as separated away from reality and from life, but truly they have their own quality, their own thoughts and their own feelings. And just because their brain isn't working the way it should, it doesn't mean that they're somehow a lesser human. You know, people with ADHD, with DID, with, you know, just anything, Asperger's, what have you, just because they're working differently does not mean that they are somehow lesser. And so I appreciate that, both in your story and in QC's poem. And just kind of like what you both said, I think what I really appreciate about this is that there is that story, the idea of the action between these things. And so I guess the way that I took it with the beep, beep, beeps, of course, being kind of those thoughts in between the heartbeats, the way that time slows down when you're in a moment of when you're in a moment of trouble, of crisis, time kind of seems to slow down. And, you know, with my father being a doctor, I kind of saw it there. Granted, he was a radiologist. So he wasn't often in emergency medical issues. But having that idea of people that the moment to see the seconds in between, think of the seconds in between, the moments, for example, when my husband has an episode, there has to be that slowing of time where we pause and we think and we act, not on knee-jerk reaction, but kind of on that training that you have to learn. And so I feel like those thoughts, the ideas, I became a first responder to save lives. All I can say is this reflection on the life, the reflection on what a quality of life is to me. Those are those deep thoughts in between those moments of crisis, during this moment of deep tribulation for her, you know, trying to get this patient back. These are those moments where she's thinking about their life. And it kind of reminds me too of the flashing of your life before your eyes. You know, the thought that happens when we're close to death or we have a near-death experience, these kind of confrontations of reality, I think, happen to people who see trauma, be it something on the road going into work or be it something that they're subjected to each day of their life, their job or their living, you know, their household makeup, just what have you. And I appreciate too the dialogue, like Pam said in there, because it does let us know kind of what's going on. It builds the background of the story. It builds the environment in which this is written, helping us to understand that while this is just a patient, it's also not just the patient. It's someone that they've connected with, even if it's just in these off chances. Appreciate that, because it really lets us understand just how impactful even a few minutes can be, trying to get someone back, trying to get that rhythm back, and getting a person stable. So a stunning piece. And again, seconding what Felon and Pam said, what people do who are in the emergency field, people who are dealing with, someone helping be a caretaker, basically. It's not an easy job. And so I appreciate what both of you said, Anna and Casey's poem. So thank you, guys. All right. We're going to do a real short one. This is Doc Frank, Tolerance. And Pam, would you give this one a read? Oh, my gosh. Did I post it wrong again?
No, but I have to step away. I apologize.
No, no, that's totally okay. Felon, would you mind taking this read?
I'll be honored. This is by Doc Frank, and this is called Tolerance. Best way to gauge your tolerance is to measure it against people that you can't stand the most, for the dislike will test your tolerance best. End poem.
Beautiful read, Felon. Thank you. And a fantastic write by Doc Frank. What I really like about Doc Frank's piece is that he speaks so vividly with so few words. If you say that you're a tolerant person, then to apply the things that you claim you're tolerant from someone who you don't like, that's really going to be that gauge of, are you truly tolerant or are you tolerating someone just because you like them, just because you don't have any other reasons to dislike them, you're willing to overlook it. That's not real tolerance. And again, it kind of goes back to that idea of acceptance, of accepting people as they are. If you truly are accepting of people, if you truly are tolerant of them and that sort of thing, then even if it's someone who you don't like, you're still going to have that ability to overlook it and say, not a big deal. But when we start complaining about it as an additional reason to dislike someone, that really is great. So it's short, but it's to the point, and I feel like he just kind of nails it right on the head. So a great job. And Felon, having read it, what did you think?
I like it too. It's short and to the point, as you said, but it's basically saying that, you know, sometimes you're going to come against the people that you really can't stand, but yet, you know, that person might not even know that you can't stand them, and that's showing true tolerance because you're not letting them know that you have an inside beef with them that they probably don't even know about. So tolerance is basically keeping your thoughts to yourself and being tolerant of the situation and accepting them for who they are. And basically, it might be even you that's the problem, not even them. So tolerance is a virtue, and sometimes you got to just let it be.
Absolutely. That was so well said. And I like that you say that it's a virtue because it is. It is something that doesn't come naturally, I think, to people. It is one of those things that people work for and they fine tune and make it a part of themselves, you know, something that they truly work on. So thank you for that, Felon. That was just perfect. All right. So with Pam running away for a moment, I'm going to have us listen to our next SoundCloud. And this is Stories from My Colors. By R.F. Morris.
My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union, and is not either to save or to destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union, and what I forbear. I forbear because I do not believe it would help to save the Union. I shall do less whenever I shall believe what I am doing hurts the cause, and I shall do more whenever I shall believe doing more will help the cause. Abraham Lincoln, August 22nd, 1862. I wonder what happened. I seem to give many people fits. I'm just a simple piece of cloth from the land of gravy, biscuits, and grits. I am a common battle flag, like hundreds that flew before me. There are untold stories in my fabric of men, their tragedy, and their glory. started out being revered, flew from every home in the South. Generals, even an admiral, saluted me, words of honor and respect from their mouth. There are stories never to be told, for the soldiers no longer are here. Graves scattered throughout the South. Their resting place is not safe, I fear. I have flown over state capitals. I have flown from the backs of pickups. They've even made me into swimwear, been sewn onto high school dance tux. If they only knew what I've seen. Spilled blood and disease caused death. Ragtag army of volunteer soldiers, wounded, breathing their last breath. Lincoln couldn't have states seceding. How dare you break away from us? You're only poor, foolish dirt farmers. But it was Lincoln these farmers distrust. He wrote edicts to control the South. He didn't count on the spirit within. He stopped the transfer of arms. He didn't count on the will to win. Our battalions always outnumbered. They had an unlimited supply. Their cannons and arms were newer. We used our own rifles to get by. Lincoln hoped we'd give up quickly. Never thought we had this much fight. The battles lasted 4 long years. We fought hard for our God-given rights. The battle for Atlanta was near. They tried to go south at first. Yanks were beat at Brown's Mill. This defeat was one of their worst. This forced the North into Atlanta, but the time had come to surrender. I flew over that battle, waving proudly, what I saw woven into me forever. March to the sea, a scene of horrors, everything destroyed in their path. Knew they had won, but did it anyway, punishment for causing Lincoln's wrath. The South gave it all they had, fought for what they knew was right. They gave it a valiant effort, gave their lives to fight the good fight.
A wonderful reading by R.S. Morris. He says in his author's note that he says, the war and aftermath from the flag's point of view. And so before we go really into comments, gentle reminder that this is not a political show. So we are not going to get into the various viewpoints on the Confederate flag. But at the piece as a whole, the appreciation for the work that it is, not necessarily the possibly controversial conversations that can come up with it. So first I'm going to check, Pam, did you happen to make it back? That is a no. So, Felon, would you mind giving us your thoughts first?
One second. You taught me to put a whole mouth of cereal in my mouth. I was like, oh, okay. it was a big bite.
Hey, I mean, late night cereal is the best.
What I like about this poem is that he spoke of heritage of where he's from, and he didn't to He didn't do it to brag on anything of that we see today as just vile. I mean, I don't believe in owning anyone. No one should own anyone. But I think he was speaking of the rebel flag is what he's speaking of, the Confederate flag or whatever. I think this has a lot of great history in it, and that it really spoke of what the minds and the things that were going on. Like we started out with the quote that he had of Abraham Lincoln for the Union, you know, and I don't know if that has to do, if this is on the thing as hollers, but I think it's the 4th of July carryover, but this is an excellent right. I apologize.
No, you're totally great. And that was such a fantastic comment, truthfully. You know, one of the things that your comment and even this piece reminds me of is that so often we forget that history is written by the winners. So if you look at American history and you look at what is taught in schools, something that is overwhelmingly ignored is, for example, Native Americans. We don't really hear their side. We did terrible, terrible things to them. And we speak about it in our history like, somehow it was a conquest. It was a war that we won. And it really wasn't, you know, we just decimated the native people. And so what I appreciate about this is that political opinions aside, again, this is not a reflection of LNP's personal beliefs, political beliefs. This is just a reflection on a piece of poetry. But What I appreciate about this is that so often when we look at the Civil War in history, the South is often villainized because, again, slavery, which 100% valid. No human should be a slave, just period. But what we often forget is that there were people that had reasons to believe and fight for that. And so I appreciate the manner in which he spoke this poem. It really comes off as kind of an old reverence, the amazing grace playing in the back and the voice in which he speaks. And then, of course, not really coming here to say I'm in the right or I'm in the wrong, just an understanding of what the flag probably saw, because there were people that, you know, had their reasons to fight for what they did. And it may or may not have been as evil as history tells us. And so, you know, you mentioned that you don't really see tolerance, and I can see that. I agree. But at the same time, I also do see this reminder that sometimes history is portrayed in ways that forget that there were humans on the other side that had their reasons. They just didn't get the chance to tell their side because they lost. And again, that's pretty unanimous across the nation. I mean, if you look at Great Britain, when we were doing the Revolutionary War, again, Great Britain is villainized because really who likes taxes? I mean, I'm a tax specialist, and even some taxes I'm like, gosh, this is stupid. So, you know, we villainized even Great Britain when we talk about a Revolutionary War, because again, who wants the victor to be the bad guy? Even though we could even be argued to be a bratty child, there is the, you know, Revolutionary War. So I think this was a great piece that just kind of offers a slightly different perspective without condemning either side. It speaks in a very neutral tone, which I appreciate. And again, it just kind of says, you know, once upon a time, I was just a flag. I wasn't this mark of evil that has been cast upon me. And so I think that was a really quite an interesting take. So interesting. Well done. Check in one more time. Pam, did you happen to make it back? I think she's still hiding. Okay. All right, so I think she's still stepped away, so I am going to move on with that, and we are going to go to Tolerance by Esma Chiba, and I'll give this one a read. And just, Casey, so when we're on air, we do have a group, Late Night Poets, on allpoetry.com, and we have what's called the board. It's basically a live chat where our members are able to interact with the show. And so Casey Day, who we read her poem earlier, she says in regards to this last poem, wow, what a powerful poem. Amazing grace in the background really brings it all to a head. Never heard of Lincoln's Rest before, just wow. And so again, just offering that different perspective, not justifying, just a different perspective to perhaps grow an understanding. So thank you, Casey, for that. That was wonderfully said. All right, up next, we have Tolerance by Esma Chiba, and I will give this read. Seeking enlightenment is a lifetime quest. The more we know and experience shifts our perspective in a dynamic way, makes us realize our limitations and acknowledge that we are far from perfect as mortal beings. Education is a great leveler. Knowledge is a manifestation of perfection residing in our hearts, developing wisdom and the ability to tolerate our own humanity. And Felon, I know I had you comment first on that last one, but would you mind commenting first on this one as well?
Or no,
I
don't want
it
all.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just, yeah, I was eating my famous I can't think of it. Cocoa Pebbles. I love Cocoa Pebbles. But anyway, I like this because it's basically saying just because someone doesn't have the same experience that you have, or they're not on the same educational level or that of intelligence, you know, tolerance is showing wisdom, and that's seeing that not everyone is on the same page or on that same level of life. And tolerance is accepting that fact and not really, you know, putting yourself out there to boast or to put the other person down. Being tolerant to the fact that life has just probably not treated them so kind, and they were not afforded the opportunities that you were given. So I think this is an excellent, great brevity, full of great wisdom.
Absolutely. That was so well said. Thank you for that. I think you kind of hinted on this, but education is a great leveler. Knowledge is a manifestation. It actually reminds me of this last year. So again, I'm a tax specialist. I'm a licensed accountant in public accounting. I've been doing it for over a decade. I'm really good at what I do. You know, again, I'm a random person on the radio. Can't really take what I say, but I'm good at what I do. And one of the things that 2020 really kind of caused in my industry is this leveling. With all the tax law changes that we had, pretty much everybody that knew anything, because of course we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which happened in 2018. If 19 happened, but the tax year for 19 really started taking effect in 2020. And so it was that great leveler because we had to adjust to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act being started and then all the CARES Acts and COVID and redoing life and all these new bills that were passed that are now affecting the 2020 tax filing in 2021. I have more knowledge on some of these laws than some of the other people that I work with, people who've been doing what I do for decades, more than me. But because all these laws kind of changed the industry, a lot of the things that we used to take for granted are just not there in the way that they were. And so we've seen this leveling in my industry because people who've known the tax law forever suddenly are struggling because there's been so many changes. And so I appreciate this in that sense because so often, you know, we do things for so long. I do my job for so long and suddenly, you know, and I'm a tax expert. But suddenly we are kind of knocked from our throne, if you will, because no longer are we all-knowing and all-knowledgeable and have all this skill and knowledge that we've amassed because life did something like COVID and completely changed how all the new laws and all the new things that we have to take into consideration. And so I really appreciated this because it does remind us that knowledge and wisdom and even enlightenment come with time. It comes with experience, and that we are never too old to truly stop growing and seeking to do better and be better. So really, really just a fantastic write, and I appreciate it. So, all right, my little chili pepper, did I catch you with food in your mouth, or can I convince you to read a poem for me?
I can read a poem for you.
Awesome. And just to read what Casey says, she says, seeking enlightenment is a lifetime quest. Yes, it changes and people change as they grow and learn. I absolutely disagree with when famous people are forced to apologize for something they said 20 years ago. They grew, they changed, it happens, we're human. Like if we can accept that things have changed, we need to accept that people have changed too. And I think that's such a profound comment. Because we as humans, yeah, you know, we as humans are not stagnant creatures. There are some that just kind of get stuck in their rut and do what they do. But we are not stagnant creatures. We have the ability to grow and change. And God knows I am not the person I was 10, 20 years ago, because I would have been in my teens 20 years ago. But we are not the same people that we are 10 and 20 years ago. But even then, you know, someone who's in their 50s compared to when they're in their 30s, someone in their 30s compared to when they're in their 10s, you know, we're just not the same. You know, 20 years does have a lot of growth capability. And so to say people don't change is just a little too short-sighted. So beautiful comment, Casey. Thank you for that. And up next, we're going to do A Mental Wealth of Weather's Hope by Mosh Pit Politics. And go ahead and take that away whenever you are ready, Felon.
Mosh Pit, A Pit Politics is A Mental Wealth of Weather's Hope. I feel like I'm falling. I feel like I'm falling. I feel like if I felt like falling, I'd fail to fall. But if I fail, would it be that a fail was as well? It's hard to tell. A fear of failure feels real as hell. But I try to recall the thoughts of when I was small. Failing to fall isn't falling at all. What time anyway, apart from something we watch wind away, any time of day, time escapes. When the rhyme relates, because it's not always a smiley face, when your mind is wide awake, thoughts are deep. It can be cool, but it's cruel with grief. I'm finding faith in fighting fate against the odds despite the craze. I'm finding ways to remind my brain that I'm kind of sane. I floated days and rode the waves per COVID days, smoking notes wrote on the page. Show and illustrate that thoughts can go into flows that flow into flames that burn, though the hurt and the pain, instead of pulling the curtains closed on the stage, or leaving a note like Cobain. I won't just moan and complain. When you have hope, you can you then notice change. Carrying grief and depression makes the impression you feel a fool and gets it in the way. But use pain as your fuel, and you'll never fall again. Admiring rhyming timing to fight an inspiring change. Trying to provide escapes to the minds and chains. It's never too late for time to wait. When the rhyme relates, the purpose is what it's worth. You can hope, bring hope to the surface. We've got it to word it. Life's rough and texture's absurd. Life's lectures observed. I'm protecting my work and collecting my worth before I rest and I burn. Life's a lesson not worth guessing, but learned. It's pattern of life, what happens, what might, what catches our mind, like wind with a kite. What holds it tight, the battles that fight, what we've lost, what we've said goodbye. Remember the words I wrote and now write. A bird would never met the sky. If he had to hope, it would get to fly. This is the beginning to the feel of the topical tone. It's a difficult zone. It's the mental health. It's the physical zone. Friends were meant to help instead of calling a miserable bro. I know I'm difficult and broke, and I'm living like a ghost. I just want to be given some hope. But nothing's forgiven, and I'm giving some rope by those that I thought would give me their vote. Life's going downhill, and I'm slippery slope. Can't catch a break. I'm just a ridiculous broke. The world's in my way, and this way is the world. I'm like tripping over a globe, but give in, I won't. I'm missing the show. I got a wizardly flow. And with this shit that I wrote, most will sink in, but to some it just won't. Off at the top, or like I'm skinning the stones. I don't care who's at the top, and like a dead fish that just won't float. I'm on the tips of my toes. I'm on the skipping of a rope. I'm hitting the bag with the riz and the roach. Then I disappear in the smoke. Grief is the proof of love. Believe the truth. See it true. It's impossible to see it through. We've got forever yet. From whenever they felt, we've all been in tears. But some that will say they never yet wept. Some of my best possessions are momentum. Yeah, strengthened, and that's like being strengthened and there he's blessed. Just remember, that's a path. We're all dreaming of healing, dealing with feelings, rhyming and scheming. Are we allowed peace? like if trees breathe, because we grew up quick and our roots were, I think. But now we're not showing what we were going through. See, nobody sees it, and we don't even need it. And keep it like we needed it. Reveal it, and please believe it. It could be at least be someone else's reason for healing. Let it be. I keep sharing what is hope. I don't realize I had mental health inside my mind, and until I was embarrassed. When I put it online, wasn't looking for a hype, with the status be like 8 likes. Too long, most of my eyes just scrolled by, but it did manage to help some hold tight. They let me know that they were close to letting go, so I write. No longer embarrassed or shy to the talent of mine, I know what it's like. My eyes and can't stand to cry. Many manage to hide or choose to lie due to the pride, but you're not stupid. If you feel like the life is just an onion, find yourself letting out cries every time. It's only you and your mind that can decide the moves is right. It's pretty here, but yet use it in an ammo, not a camo, and then the damage of it's fine. Have it and climb. These words are like ladders in line. It helps me balance my mind. I've learned not to guess and real things not vanish or hide. So now I try to use my pain as ammo instead of damages and fly. Even when my words mess, and I guess this planet is mine, I'll have it then fine. Don't get mad at the rhyme and I'm not knocking at the herbs. I'm just passing the time. I float on smoke. Out of all the stuff I just wrote, I've always tried to open the hope. Try to give a break to those feeling broke. So on the pen goes the flow, and it's never been shown. To give a name and the aim to those in pain, and that one never, ever knows. It's a mental wealth of weathers hope. End point.
A lot of poem to read, but you did it so fantastically and truly in such a fantastic voice for this piece. I think what I really appreciate with this is that it really first starts off with the idea of, if I fail to fall, am I succeeding? Or if I fall, did I fail? Or if I intended to fall, am I still failing? It's kind of this idea that so often we have this idea of what success is, of what how we succeed, how we prove our value, prove our worth. But really, those ideas, and I think this is where the rest of the poem kind of speaks, a lot of those ideas are actually just societal constructs of what it believes we should do, how we should do things. But this piece to me, the idea of tolerance even comes with this concept of letting go, of just being, accepting yourself for who you are. Because sometimes your words, even if you don't trust them because society has told you you're not good enough, you're not worthy, you're just embarrassing yourself, sometimes your words are all that some people need. And so, again, this poem then goes from that, you know, idea, the going back and forth of, you know, am I a failure? Is this still failing if it's intended? Then builds up to, I'm going to be me, because there's hope in it, there's strength, there's life. I'm going to own who I am, even if everyone else says that it's wrong. So I think it's just a truly stunning piece, and you did such a marvelous job reading it. So thank you for that. Oh, and I wanted this is a thought that I had too, that kind of ruminating back and forth of what is truly a failure and what isn't. There's a rug in my parents' house. I know, random. There's a rug in my parents' house, and that rug has intentional. It's got these continuing patterns, repetitive patterns. But that rug also has intentional flaws, because the people that made it believe that only God can be perfect, and therefore they intentionally messed up their own pattern so that there was these intentional flaws. And so it does, that early rumination kind of begs the question of, is it truly an imperfection if it was intentional? If you fall, is it truly a failing if you meant to? So all in all, fantastic poem. And we do have a new caller, so I'm going to bring him on real quick. Area code 703, who are we speaking with?
C'est moi. I just stopped by on my way to bed. So I stopped in to say hello.
Welcome, welcome, Bobby. Are you here for at least a little bit, or are you just saying hi and letting us hear your pretty voice?
I was staying for about 15 minutes, and now I'm going to scoot off to bed. I was watching a movie and got a little too comfortable in my chair and nodded off.
Oh, no.
Woke up, and I came in here to check on my mail in my study, and I saw your contest, and I actually 2 days ago had written something and hadn't even realized that you had this contest going, so I very quickly
cleaned it
up and dropped it in. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, first I'm going to ask, did you get a chance to hear this poem that Felon just read?
Not. I did not. No.
Okay. No worries. So I'm going to have Pam and Felon comment on it really, really quickly, not at the same time, but have them comment on it. And then if you don't mind, I'd love to put your poem up. It's the tolerance of conflict, right?
Yeah, mine's the acrostic. That's actually my very first acrostic.
Really? Oh, my goodness, guys, we've got this honor on the show. I love Bobby's writing, and so I'm just so excited to listen to her first acrostic. I know it's going to be amazing. So, okay, so I'm going to have them comment, and then we'll have you read yours. Does that sound good to you?
Sue.
Awesome. Okay, so with that being said, Pam, would you mind sharing some of your thoughts?
I would be happy to. Well, first of all, I have to say Felon did a wonderful read, and I hope after that she got herself like a drink of sweet tea or something, because, wow, Mosh Pit, I mean, the way he flows with his thoughts, and he does such long writes. It would kind of be nice if he made recordings of his writes. But I like how this is very self-reflective. I like that he brings up Kurt Cobain, one of my all-time favorite singers. Instead of pulling the curtains closed on stage or leaving a note like Cobain, I won't just moan and complain when you have hope, you then notice change. You know, it's a very sad thing when a person feels like they no longer have any hope, like that they have to leave that note. And, you know, I think this is kind of somebody finding their own inner strength. And it's a difficult zone. This is mental health. It feels physical, though. Friends were meant to help instead of calling me miserable, bro. There's some wonderful rhyme and flow to this. And I like that he touches upon the mental health and depression and what a struggle it is and how there are physical symptoms as well, and how important it is that we be the one to reach out to people who you know are seem to be pulling away or something seems to be wrong. You can never expect a person who is truly caught in the grips of depression to come to you. You have to be the one to go to them. And another line I really like is it helps me balance my mind. You know, I think it's so important that we find that something, that we find whatever it is that gives us that sense of balance, or that sense of peace. And, you know, whatever works for you and doesn't harm other people, and this is my personal beliefs. You know, I know there are people who can go on rants about people using any form of medication, whether it's, you know, smoking pot or taking an antidepressant. And me personally, as someone who has taken antidepressants for years and you know, knows people who smoking helps them deal with anxiety and depression, I just feel sometimes people aren't even trying to live in other people's shoes. I feel like that until you've, like, been at rock bottom, and that you shouldn't judge how a person deals with their depression. I think this is a powerful and thought-provoking write, And once again, Felon, you did a brilliant read of it, so very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you.
And that was such a fantastic comment there, Pam, because you're right. It's so easy for people to judge and say, well, what works for me, or I think, and I actually think of like my in-laws. My husband has, again, he's got a plethora of stuff, PTSD and adjustment disorder, bipolar, depression, naturally, an adjustment disorder. I think I mentioned that. But he's on medication for it. It's part of what helps us deal with all the things that go on with him. My father-in-law is also a 100% disabled veteran. But even though he too has PTSD and bipolar, he refuses to be medicated for it.
Uh-oh.
I think she's gone.
Oh, there she is. Okay. Are you there, Victoria? Oh, okay.
Oh,
well,
she's
she has dropped. So while Victoria calls back, Felon, go ahead and share your thoughts. Felon?
Can I say something? Yeah, well, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, Poppy.
May I comment on your comment? Yes, I can.
Yes.
I wanted to say that I thought there was great wisdom in your comment, Pam. A great compassion. There's a Native American saying that unless you have worn the moccasin he wears or stumbled beneath the same load, do not judge. And I agree with you. You cannot. I tell my young friends. Everyone has their story, and you shouldn't levy a judgment against someone until, even before you know their story, don't judge. And I try not to judge anyone regardless, because I don't know their story. I don't enter. And that's one of my prime prerequisites for my friends. And my friendship to them is I may not agree with them, but I will love them regardless, and I will never, ever judge them.
Well, and I made it back.
Amen to that.
And I love that you say that. I was going to say, I love that you say that, Bobby, because earlier in the show we were even talking that true tolerance is not just, again, the idea of tolerating someone. It is accepting them and loving them for who they truly are, true love. Is accepting and loving someone as they are, perfections, imperfections, everything. So I love that you say that. And thank you for jumping in when my phone decided it no longer wanted to play.
One of my best friends and I share the same birthday, and I like to describe my friend Leonard as a strange ranger. My uncle was actually a strange ranger, two very eccentric people. And if you've ever known one, and I'm sure we all have, they're very easy to judge because they'll say or do things that will be just totally unfiltered, and other people will look at them and go, what the fuck? And I just look at them and accept. They will. Yeah, and I've seen that what the fuck look before, because I've been on the receiving end of it. I have this fortunate tendency to like to do things for shock value just to see if people are paying attention. That will get you judged. Believe me, that will get you judged.
I giggle. Oh, go ahead.
I have this friend that he's a very strange ranger, but I'll tell you what, he's one of those people that in a time of need, I could call him and say, Leonard, I need you, and he'll be there. Matter of fact, he proved that. The day my partner died, I called Leonard because he's a mortician.
Oh my goodness!
But Leonard could be a whole story. He could be a program himself, because he decided to do this in his 50s, which I think takes a lot of courage.
Oh my goodness!
But I called him. And this is a total 180 out from the fact that he was a journalist before that. And I called him, and he thought, I said, Leonard, this is not a social call. And so he was here in haste, took care of everything. And afterwards, the next few days, I met with him. He walked me through the entire process. And it just it beautiful because he was my friend, too. And he knew how much he was helping me.
Oh, that is amazing. Truly, that is amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
And honestly, it even extends to when we were planning the services. Leonard asked me what I wanted to do, and he knows I'm unconventional too. And he said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I no wake." I said, "No services, no memorial services." I said, "Cremation." And he said, "How do you want to do this?" And I said, "Well, I can only think of one way." And he says, no. He said, "There's details." He said, I said, "Well, explain them to me." And he said, it could be anything from you're standing in the viewing room. They open the curtains. You watch the box go in. They shut the torch, and they close the curtains. I said, "What's the other end of it?" He said, "You go into the room. They explain to you what to do. You help put the box in the torch. You shut the door and you press the button and you start the procedure." And I said, "Give me 24 hours. And I called him back after thinking about it. I said, "Leonard, I want to press the button." And he never questioned me.
Oh my goodness.
And some of my friends, they know me to be a strong person, but they said, "How could you possibly do that?" I said, I examined my relationship with him. And I said, of all my years with him, I tried my very best to do exactly what he needed me to do. And this one last time, he needed me to do this. And that was my closure.
Oh my
and
goodness.
I did that. Yeah, it was
absolutely
tough thing that I read.
You know, I really appreciate you, Bobby, the way you always have such these wonderful, intimate stories to share. But I do have to redirect us back to the poetry because we don't have a lot of time left and still other
right,
writers
I'm sorry.
We want to indulge
back,
in.
Back from tangent land.
Well,
you,
I
Pam.
Appreciate
you. Bless Pam.
That
bless Pam's hard for the straight and narrow.
All right. So I'm going to have us read Bobby's poem next. So, Bobby, whenever you're ready, go ahead and take that away.
All righty. Let me tee it up here. Oh, I got to refresh my screen. my screen just said,
"Same technology never makes our life easier."
I love technology. There it is. Okay, here we go. Like I said, I for some reason this popped into my head a few days ago, and I dashed it down when I saw your contest. I went, "Oh no, this can't be real." So I wrote an acrostic, my very first acrostic ever. And it's titled, of course, Tolerance. Tolerance, truth, objectivity, love, empathy, respectfulness, accountability, nurturing, communication, educating. End poem.
Oh, Bobby. You know, this is, I think, what Mindy calls a gemmy. You're to the point. You are concise with your words, and yet you really capture the idea of what tolerance truly is. I think so often we think that tolerance is similar to the word tolerate. And, you know, when we think of tolerating something, it's like, you know, my 2-year-old or my 4-year-old who've constantly barged in when I try and call into the early show, the show tolerates them. I tolerate them. You know, it's not the greatest, but we can find some fun in it. But, you know, it's a tolerating because it's preferred not. But tolerance is truly so much more than that. There is an understanding of their truth, an objectivity of seeing outside yourself, the love portion of it in acceptance of them, empathizing with them, even though you may not have walked in their shoes, respecting it, being accountable to yourself and to that respect, nurturing the relationship, communicating with them to better understand them, better understand their position, perhaps change your worldview. And then, of course, the education, because when someone comes from a life that we don't come from, there is that opportunity to learn. And it reminds me of this idea that, you know, even in my profession, I'll have someone who's been doing this a lot longer than me say, you know, "Well, how much do you know about estate taxes?" And I'm like, you know, I know a good deal about it, but if you want to tell me something, I'll listen, because maybe you'll tell me something I don't know. Worst case scenario, you tell me everything I already know. Best case scenario, you tell me something I don't. And so that idea of educating and willing to learn from it, I think you really just did a fantastic job of so concisely capturing this. And so it's just a fantastic piece. So thank you for writing this and sharing. And I'm so glad it popped in your head just a few days ago. It's just the universe aligned and makes my heart happy.
I must have been channeling you.
I think so. And it
twin
does
sisters,
look like, unfortunately. Oh, go ahead.
The twin sisters of different mothers.
Amen. and it does look like fell and dropped. Hopefully she'll call back in, because she had a piece that I really wanted to hit that next. But while we wait, Pam, would you mind sharing some of your thoughts?
Oh, I would be happy to. Well, first of all, now we know how to get Bobby to write Brevity. Make her write an acrostic that has six letters or less.
You broke the code on me.
Right. No, I have to say, this is wonderfully clever. I do enjoy the acrostic form. And I like how you carefully chose your words. This is one of those that it should be hanging on a plaque in people's kitchens or in homes, because, you know, it reminds us of how important tolerance is, and it conveys so easily the profound thought of what it means to really think about other people. So beautifully done. An excellent acrostic.
Thank you very much.
Beautifully said, Pam. Thank you so much. All right, so I don't see Fallon on just yet. I messaged her just in case, but I'm going to have us go to a short poem just in case she calls in, because I'd really, really like to hear her write in her voice. So we'll read Marvin Goldfarb, and this is Truth Bears Fruit. And Pam, would you mind giving this a read?
I would be happy to. All right. Truth Bears Fruit by Marvin Goldfarb. Getting married is easy. It is just a piece of paper. But staying married is an interesting caper. It is dedication on both sides. It is where he and she confide. Neither takes the other for rides. Remember, truth bears fruit. End poem.
Such a great write. The idea that, you know, it is easy. We so often look at the wedding as the big day, but really, truly, a marriage is not made on that day. It's not a piece of paper. It's that commitment, that growing together, you know, the fruit that is born from that labor. I truly just adore this piece, because it does give us that reminder that it's easy to get married. It's easy to have a piece of paper. It's easy, you know, arguably, to throw together a wedding. But it really is that dedication that really brings out that truth. And that doesn't include, you know, overcoming obstacles of opposition with the person you love and cherish most. So great, great write by Marvin. And Bobby, what did you think?
I agree. A wedding certificate is a document, nothing more. Nothing more. Like a recipe is a document. Like a birth certificate is a document. But a marriage is a meeting of minds. It's a compromise. It is tolerance. I think it's tolerance in its most elegant form, because here's two people who say they love each other, and they have to strike a lifelong compromise and in order to make it work. And it's give and take, and I think this poem that says it with elegant simplicity.
I think that's so well said. And I love what you said. You know, it isn't, you know, a piece of paper. And it's funny that you say that. I mean, I share that semblance, but my brother-in-law, I was married before. My ex-husband had four affairs on me, and I left him when I came home from work to his girlfriend picking out what she wanted in the house I bought, that I bought for he and I. And at that point, I was like, no, you're not here for this. And so I divorced him, and I met my now husband 2 months before my divorce was finalized. It was serendipitous. I went and visited my sister in Kansas. She ended up taking me to his house for a game night, and he was there, and he was supposed to be a one-night stand. And now, you know, married with two kids, and we just celebrated our wedding anniversary on the 1st of July.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 5 years married. Don't know how that happened, but I don't know. Yeah. The joke is I have a four-year-old. She was born 2 weeks before my one-year wedding anniversary with my husband. And so I don't know where the time went for her being four, but I do know where every minute went that I've been married to him. So, no, I love him. He's wonderful. He's a good man. But, you know, my brother-in-law thinks that I am an evil, adulterous girl because my husband and I met 2 months before my divorce was finalized. I'd been separated from my ex-husband for over a year at that point, but because, heaven forbid, my now husband and I happened to meet 2 months before my divorce was finalized, I'm an evil adulteress. You know, he's an abuser, so it's an excuse. But I do appreciate her, have so much more meaning, but really, truly, no matter what you believe in, you know, no matter if it's a God or nothing, or if you think the law is absolute or that it's not, fact of the matter is that so many people can have a piece of paper and it truly means nothing if the dedication isn't there. So I love the way you said that, Bobby. Sure. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And welcome. And what did you think?
I think your brother, oh, go ahead, Bobby, brother-in-law needs to learn about your contest on tolerance.
he needs to learn about quite a few things. You know, there's some really cool things in the Everglades I'd love to introduce them to. And you didn't hear that from me. All right. What? And Pam, what did you think on this?
Well, I'm going to guess that your brother-in-law doesn't listen to late night poets radio shows.
I don't think he listens to anything.
I like how Bobby used the phrase elegant simplicity, because I think that works really well for Marvin's writing. He has wonderful brevity. He gets straight to the point. I really enjoy every line, but staying married is an interesting caper. It's a dedication on both sides. It's like that saying that says, you know, it's not 50-50, it's 100-100, or you know,
absolutely.
Or even the idea that sometimes one person can give a little less because they are going through a difficult time. But I like that he calls marriage an interesting caper, because I really think that, you know, there's a certain fun in that line, the whole idea that you got to keep things interesting. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Said Pam. And you're right, you know, there is that need to continue to dedicate. It is that idea that it isn't 50-50. It's always 100%, 100%, that constant devotion to each other, to the relationship. You know, each person has to give 100% of themselves. And yeah, there are days when, you know, some people give a little bit more than others, you know, but the hope is that on your off day, the other person also does the same for you. Because again, it's a give and take. It's not a give and give and give and give and give, and the other person just never does the same. So beautifully, beautifully said. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you both for your fantastic comments. All right. So up next, we've got about 20 minutes left. So I really, really, really want to get Felons in, but I haven't heard from her. So I'm going to have us read this one, and I'll actually take this feed. So this is
Victoria.
The three of
Maria?
Oh, yes.
I was going to say, I said I was going to duck in and duck out, but you lost Felon.
Yes,
and
so
I know
sorry.
We're into a show with two people. So I'll hang with you to the end.
Oh, you are so wonderful, Bobby. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Appreciate your appreciation.
All right, so, I just love Bobby. Okay, so this is The Three of Mama's Girls by Felon. Being the oldest of three sisters, Being the oldest of three sisters has its pros, but boy, does it have cons. guess you could say I was the first to wear all hand-me-downs. Finished all the fives my little sisters would start, and I would end it with a hard right. Mama would always remind me, you're the one to lead and show tolerance. 40-plus years of being the big sister schooled me in the virtue of patience. First real date, my sister Anne threw a frog on me and screamed, it peed, it peed. I was able to contain tolerance and let her breathe after she frightened me. Tolerance spoke hard. Whim allowed the enemy a pass, not because she is kin to me. End poem. And Bobby, would you start us off on comments?
Well, I can't speak from personal experience because I have no siblings, but I can envision this. And I've watched my friends with siblings, especially the neighbor's children, torment each other. And I think that the picture of tolerance is letting your little sister throw a frog on you on your first real date and not strangle her afterwards. she, what did you do to your little sister? I throttled her. She understood that this is a younger sibling who's going to do things like this that you can blackmail them with when they get older.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm the little sister. I'm technically the big sister. I have a younger brother, but I'm the middle of three. And there's in many ways I've always acted as the older sister, but I definitely can feel that. There's been times where I was definitely annoying as a kid and did things to my sister just because I could. So it is by the grace of God that I am probably alive, but at the same time, I think I sometimes filled out just as much as I got. So I think that was such a fantastic comment because younger siblings are a handful and I see it with my two littles. So it's great. It's life. It's nature. It's the circle of siblings. And Pam, what did you think about this?
I really enjoy this. I'm the oldest of three. We are two girls and our youngest is our brother. And I like how this is served up with a dash of humor, and yet it has that serious thought, too. Like, it was very humorous, the whole first real date, my fan threw a frog on me and screamed, it pee-peed. Oh, my goodness, that part was funny. But then when she says, Colin spoke hard when allowing the enemy a path, not because she is kin to me. Like the whole idea that when somebody who's related to us hurts us in one way or another, that we don't forgive them just because they are kin. We forgive them because it's part of the learning and healing process for us. So I think this is just a beautiful and powerful rite and very well done.
Such a fantastic comment. And you're right, because there are a lot of times when, it's family. And we put up with a lot more from our family because, we've gotten to see them in the good, the bad, the weak, the strong, their greatest moments and some of their biggest failures. And so they've given us that reprieve in times of need that other people may not have. And so it's reciprocated, again, not because they're family, but because of that connection and that relationship. So that was such a fantastic comment. Echoing what both of you have said, there really is that idea that so many times we see the hard, we're a little bit, at least in my family, they tend to be very judgmental of people that are in our family, other people. And I distinctly remember growing up, my sister's friends would behave a certain way that was not to standard of our family. And the excuse was, well, they're allowed to do that because they're not in our family, but we are in our family, and there's that superiority idea. But at the same time, there's some of the biggest grace that was given, some of the greatest love that was given in our family, not because we're superior, not because we're better, because I don't think that we are. I think my family's rather fucked up, but there's just kind of that understanding that we're in this together, that if shit hits the fan, they're going to be there for us. And so we give that little extra reprieve. And again, as the little sister, that weird little sister, older sister kind of position, there's definitely been a few times. I remember my brother, for example, stubbing his toe and just like falling on the floor wailing. And it was like, oh my God, he's so traumatic. And I don't know. I feel like my brother was the most dramatic of all of us kids, and there's like two girls and him, so not saying something. But at the same time, you look at it and it's like, well, you know, it's my brother. Like, I still love him. Obviously, he's on a struggle bus. So I just think this shows a real beauty of how tolerance is taught, and it often starts in the home, which is also where, you know, hate and prejudice and everything else starts too. So I think this is a real testament to the beauty that a home can provide for people. So thank you guys for your comment. And to Fallon, I am so sorry we didn't get to this while you were on the phone, but I do hope that you get to listen to our comments or are listening to our comments, because it's a fantastic piece. So with that, I'm going to have us move on to a piece by Thomas B. And Bobby, would you mind giving this read for us?
Fine. Are you kidding? I live for that request.
Oh, good. Good. That makes my heart happy. I'm easy to please.
Okay. We have The Better Human Wins by Thomas B. To act like those who transgressed against me made me no better than them. I would not be like them in any action or claim if I was ever to be at peace with the pain received. Yet I will never bow or accept their rule, for the torture of the bully never ends. They may smile to your face as they wait for the first sign of weakness to lay waste. I forgive only because I am not willing to bear the burden of their behavior as a scar on my day. The more they evoke a reaction, the more traction I give them and would give them nothing. So I am kind, for that is how I choose to be. I give assistance unasked when they insist to pay. I do not deny them their chance, even if it goes to charity. It is not up to me to change them, for that is a fool's commission. I refuse to honor them with revenge, nor belittle them with acts of arrogant kindness. I may use them to teach me avenues I will not travel, behaviors to shun, nor used upon by anyone. I strive to learn how to be a friend. In the end, if I am to be greater than my enemies, I have no choice but to find a more generous set of behaviors. Where they are small, I will be large. Mean, I will be gracious. I always hold before me a standard I strive to reach for. Your enemy only wins if you become like them. You must rise gracefully from every fall so they realize your mistakes are not a reflection of their perfection, only your courage to be a better human. End poem.
Oh, that was a fantastic read, Bobby, and an amazing write by Thomas B. Thank you for that. And Pam, would you start us in comments?
Absolutely. I think this is just a wonderful write on growing spiritually as a person, on how you know, the idea that we win when we become the better person mentally, emotionally, spiritually, when we don't allow ourselves to be like our enemy. And I like when he says, you know, the more generous set of behaviors, where they are small, I will be large, gracious, and all that. I forgive only because I am not willing to bear the burden of their behavior as a scar on my day. I refuse to honor them with revenge, you know, belittle them with acts of arrogant kindness. You know, I like that he says it's not going to be one of these two ways. I'm not going to acknowledge them. I'm not going to make them the center of my life by plotting out revenge. But at the same time, I'm not going to stand there smiling at their face and pretending to be their friend. I'm going to move forward with my life. I'm going to move forward with my healing. And I'm going to, on the inside, my spirit is going to grow. So just an excellent write and very well done.
That was such a poignant comment. You know, so often we think of being vindicated and validated and justified proving that the hurts that we have are somehow better because, you know, the good guy always wins and the bad guy always ends up sad, and that's just not life. And I think your comment really acknowledged that in this piece, because it really does talk about rising above it and moving beyond it, even if you never get your just desserts. So that was such a fantastic comment, Pam. Thank you so much. And Bobby, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you what you thought getting to read it.
I've been on that spot before. I really enjoyed this piece. It was profound and powerful, beautifully written, and it reminded me of as I read so many different episodes in my life. I was bullied when I was in grade school. There's a piece among my collection called Target on My Back. And when I was in grade school, I was a very, very gentle, believing child. And so, of course, the mean girls used to just, it was like a can. They'd line me up on the fence and then knock me off. I learned through pain that, you know, you get angry. And I think the angriest I've ever been in my life is when my husband left me for another woman. And I raged for 2 years. And I realized that most people say, I'll get you. And getting even, all that does is, as he says in his poem, make me no better than them. To act like those who transgressed, first two lines, to act like those who transgressed against me would make me no better than them. Absolutely. And as a boss for young Marines, I'm the first boss, I used to tell them that too. I said, if somebody comes into our admin angry and starts really teeing off on you and getting ugly, I said, you do not return fire. And people don't realize that when they get angry back, all it does is it serves several purposes. It escalates the situation. It validates it. The person thinks you're a jerk. You've just validated their assumption because you acted like a jerk. And said, I like what his line is. I forgive only because I'm not willing to bear the burden of their behavior as a scar on my day. And I used to tell my troops, you just don't act like them, because all you're doing is, you know, you're validating the fact that they think you're a jerk. And so I refuse to honor them with revenge nor belittle them with acts of arrogance or kindness. I will disagree with that. I find that when someone is, I've had contentious or obstreperous neighbors, and what I do usually with them is I'm as nice as I possibly can, because that elevates my behavior. And it also has this dandy little side benefit of confusing the crap out of them.
Which, absolutely.
You know, and I've done that to my neighbor. Just the look of confusion on her face is just wonderfully satisfying. And here all you've done is be nice to them. And it says something too, though. And his last stanza, your enemy only wins if you become like them. You must rise gracefully every fall. So they realize your mistakes are not a reflection of their perfection, only your courage to be a better human. That last stanza is so profound. And one of the things I realized, and I saw this the other day, and I actually blended it into one of my pieces, is when I was thinking about my ex-husband and how I raged at his betrayal of me and our relationship, because he was my best friend. And then I thought to myself, I don't love you enough to hate you.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
That's how I feel about bullies. I will not, because when you hate them, you give them the gift of your energy, and they're not worth it. And so that's kind of my ground floor on when someone's nasty to me. I don't love you. I don't like you enough to hate you.
Yeah. Well, and it is so it's kind of funny. You give me two thoughts, and this was also kind of my, the Polarex. Don't ever fight a bully at their level. Never go down to somebody's level because they'll always beat you with experience.
Absolutely.
Rex comment, end comment. You know, his little poignant comments. But the other thing that you really reminded me of too, and a tenet I live by, is don't let other people live in your head rent-free, because the people that are trying to get under your skin, they're going to walk away from it, and they're going to just, you know, they'll get their giggle and they'll forget about it because they're doing it for their entertainment. You know, they're being the trolls under the bridge, if you will. But these people who are vindictive and just mean and, you know, nasty, people you don't need to be around, and you're just a passing thing. You know, the cruelty that they do to us is just a passing thing for them. It's a means of entertainment, of distracting themselves. And so do not allow them to live in your head rent free. And like you said, and to me that goes along with what you said, is you do not love them enough to hate them. So why ever allow anybody to live in your head rent free? You know, it's your own space, it's your own thoughts, it's your own self. You're allowing
them to
impact you.
Well, I give them the gift of your energy and your thoughts.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right, we do have 3 minutes. And we have one more poem, so I'd like to get to this one. I don't think we're going to be able to get all comments in, so I'm going to have – I'll take this read, and then Pam, if you could take the first comment, and then if we can get to you, Bobby, that would be great. If not, then
– I agree.
Sure,
I agree with your choice. Go for it.
Okay, perfect. And so this is Tearless Cries by Rimat El-Kalam. Wounds do cause pain, yet not as much as heartaches. It pains when they undress me with their eyes, but more than that, physically. It pains me. It pains when our voice inside wants to yell, yet most of the time force. It pains when we want to dream, and yet not allowed to. It pains when we want to cry, yet resist tearless cries. It pains when we search for someone to trust, yet all we can see nearby is hatred. It pains when they say pain demands to be felt, yet can't be expressed. It pains silently inside when someone departs, yet that void remains forever as a mark. End poem. And Pam, would you share your thoughts?
Absolutely. That was a wonderful read.
Pam has dropped. Bobby, would you share your thoughts?
No pressure.
I know. She was here and then she wasn't.
The great vanishing Pam. No, I like the way it starts every sentence with it pains when and cheerless cries. It cites so many different occasions when you want to be you want to be outspoken about your anguish, but you hold it in. We paint when we search for someone to trust, yet all we can see nearby is hatred. And this is, she's citing different instances where tolerance would be the safe haven, and she can't find it. So this is a very 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 real, very visceral light.
That is such a great comment. And you're right. Like, there really is that rumination upon what pain is and how it affects us and how it expresses itself in various forms throughout our life. And it too reminds me of the idea, and it's something that I really hold to, is that what is hard for me is not hard for others, you know, and what is hard for others may not be hard for me, but hard is hard. And sometimes there is a human nature of just appreciating that people are on a struggle bus, if you will. It may not be something I understand, but I can still be there and I can still empathize and I can still try appreciate them and uplift them, even if it's not hard for me, because it's hard for them and hard is hard. And sometimes as a human, we just need to meet people where they are. So with that, I'm going to say thank you so much.
For a contest. Just sorry I got wind of it almost too late, but I'm glad I got on time. Thanks for letting me stop by.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for calling in and hanging out, especially since Sam dropped. It was perfect. Thank you to all the people who wrote in, for Kelsey and Frank, who stuck on the board, for Felon, for you, for Pam, who just kind of stuck and hung out with me. Truly, these shows happen because of the amazing people of All Poetry and Late Night Poets. So with that, I hope you have a wonderful night, Bobby. Thank you for staying up to hang out with me. Ooh. I appreciate you so, so much.
Welcome, and you talk about amazing people. Don't forget you're one of them.
I appreciate that, truly. So, all right. Well, you have a wonderful night. And to all listeners, you guys have a great time. Until next, bye.